Recognition, power, and influence is your birthright, and this podcast shows you how to get there. Welcome to episode number 214. Today's episode is all about how do you become the favorite of your boss, and not the icky wicky favorite, you know, that person who is like a yes person and just kind of looks and talks like a mini me version of their boss, but in your way, in a way that is super proactive, something that is recreatable from boss to boss, isn't because you just went to the same business school together, but because you have truly built that trust and alignment with that particular boss, and you can do it over and over again as you continue to grow and build and advance your career outside of just this one particular boss. I want everybody listening to this podcast to be the favorite, right? I want everyone to be set up as being the best possible person that ever worked for me. And I know that you have the ability to do that. And in today's episode, I'm giving you some of the ways that you can make that work for you. Let's get started. Welcome to Women Changing Leadership. I am your host, Stacey Mayer, and I teach you how to get promoted, get paid, and bring your whole self to the leadership table. I am on a mission to change organizations from the C-suite out, because women are the new face of leadership, and we are doing it on our terms. Hello, corporate badasses. Welcome to another episode of Women Changing Leadership. I am your host, Stacey Mayer, and super excited, as always, to be here with you again this week. Before I get into today's episode, I want to remind you, if you haven't already, download your 30, 60, 90-day plan for kicking butt in your career this year. I put this plan together because so many women that I'm working with are getting promoted on a regular basis, and they said, how do I overcome some of the challenges that I faced in my previous role, and I really want to make sure that I set myself up for success in this new role. And so I put together a really incredible, detailed 30, 60, 90-day plan that you can download for free at stacymayer.com/90-day-plan. But what has happened as I started to share this with women who haven't been promoted is that they're starting to use this as a blueprint to set themselves up for success in the new year. So that's why I'm offering it to you right now out of the gate of this podcast episode. Definitely go there. It gives you a really strong outline that if you can implement this in 2024, you are going to set yourself up for not only a promotion this year, but possibly a skip level promotion, and also all the future opportunities, so that you actually have that voice at the table, so that you get the job that you really, really want, so that you feel included in the conversation. Those are all of the ways that I teach you to get promoted. Ensure that that's what happens for you on the other side. So definitely go to stacymayer.com/90-day-plan. The link will also be in the show notes. If you don't have an opportunity to write that down right now, you can revisit at this at stacymayer.com. You can access all of my previous podcast episodes and revisit that conversation as well. All right. So today's episode, again, I have another caveat before I get into even today's episode, and that is an addendum to last week's episode. So last week's episode, I talked about how we're setting the wrong goals for ourselves and how it's keeping us back from actually reaching the goal that we really, really want. And I offer some suggestions of how you can set better goals for yourself. And essentially what we're doing is we're making our goals even smaller. So we still have our big goal, our long-term goal, our fantastical goal, as I talk about it in the episode. But we're getting very realistic about what is the goal for today's conversation that I'm having with whoever is on the other side of the table. And I talk about this as if it's a problem because we're not actually going for our goals because they're too big and we think that it's very complicated. And we, each one of you, in no shame, but is a perfectionist, right? Like, we want to do things well. And I think that's a great thing. This is an asset to your leadership, but that also keeps us back from actually scheduling the conversations with people. And so I mentioned a lot last week about how that's the real problem, is that we're not even getting out of our house. We're not actually having those conversations because we're so afraid of what they're going to mean. But then I received an email shortly after I recorded that episode from a previous client of mine, where she outlined the real problem of having the wrong goals when you go into conversations. And I really need to highlight this for you. Now, I want to preface this as well with the fact that I feel like she's going to listen to this episode. And if you are listening to this episode, you are 100% not allowed to shame yourself for anything that I am saying. What you did in these conversations was amazing. It was brave. It was bold. It gave you information. But I'm also going to use it as a learning tool for everyone else so that we can hopefully not fall into some of the traps in the future. So what happened for her is that she has an ally who really, really supports her career. And he has told her, you know, why don't you present me an opportunity that you're looking for? And so what she did is she actually turned this into a PowerPoint presentation, because for herself, this is a great way to align her thoughts and to get everything on paper. Plus, it's also something that her leader, her ally, responds well to. So she outlined what she's looking for at the next level of her career, and she presented it to him. And all went well. He took the information very well. He offered some suggestions, and he pointed her on her way. Now, here's where things fall short, is that she proceeded to present this PowerPoint presentation to a couple other leaders at her organization. Now, when I talk about the challenge with having the wrong goal, what I really mean is that we think that our conversations that we're having with our allies are to get ourselves promoted, when in reality, our conversations that we're having with our allies are often just to have a conversation, to get in front of them, to remind them of who we are, right? To ask a couple solid questions, to gather some intel, to get some data. And so a lot of times we can be really benefited through having conversations with executives on a regular basis, just by having FaceTime with them, just by showing them that we are quote unquote ambitious. We don't have to give them a formal presentation of what our promotion opportunities might be in the future. That's not required. And also it can be very off-putting, because the leader on the other side, one, they feel like their time is being wasted. Like, this is not something I asked you for. Why are you giving me all this information? Now I feel like I need to respond to it and I need to give you feedback. Whereas her first ally, he was very open and receptive and pretty much told her to do that. So he was willing to go through this. And so she followed directions with him. Where it kind of goes awry is we start applying that across the board to other leaders at our organization. Most leaders at our organization do not want a formal presentation from you. They just want to engage in conversation, right? They want to feel like they're helping you, but they don't want it to be a burden on their personal time. And so this is really important when it comes to goal setting. And that's why I thought it was worth sharing this with you as a caveat, that our having the right goals for our regular conversations are actually there to protect us from failure, right? From getting the wrong kind of feedback, from setting ourselves up for instantaneous defeat. I don't want you to feel that way, right? We have to protect our emotions as well, our emotional state. And I want these conversations to feel easy, to feel fun, to feel enjoyable. I want you to be nervous for sure, and push yourself outside of the comfort zone, but they shouldn't be so complicated. And that's what I'm talking a lot about, is overcoming those perfectionist tendencies that we all have by going too far, both in that keeps us back from scheduling the meeting to begin with, but then also it has us going too far when we actually get the meeting. So this is my addendum to last week's podcast episode. It was too important and specific not to share with you. So definitely go back, listen to that episode if you haven't already, and hopefully you can use this as a gauge. I do want you to be having conversations with senior executive leaders, but I am happy to coach you to have them in a more fruitful way. All right. So that's the beginning of that, the end of that. Today's conversation is about, how do you become the favorite? We have leaders at our organization, and we see that they have favorites. And I hear from women all the time about the favorites, a little bit of jealousy, about how this person just has their favorite. I would never be a successor to that person because they already have their favorite. And they're like, there's nothing that I can do about it. So today's episode, I'm going to break down for you how you could become the favorite at your organization and also what it means to be the favorite. So let me start with the second point, which is what it means to be the favorite. When I hear these comments from the women that I work with, it's not usually in a positive light. They don't usually say, I wish I could be the favorite. And often it's because there's some sort of weird underlying way that the person who is the favorite became the favorite. Like, it's not usually because they're the best person for the job. And generally speaking, there isn't a lot that we can do about it. So why is somebody just automatically the favorite of your boss? And I know you know the answer to this. I'm just going to spell it out. It's like, they look like that person. Maybe they're a yes person. So they say yes to everything that their boss says. Maybe they've known each other for a very, very, very long time. Maybe they went to school together. Maybe they make the same decisions. They seem like two peas in a pod. Like, it's just like this little corporate structure walking around, and you see what they're doing and you're like, I don't think that way. I don't agree with them. Well, I guess that's how you become the favorite. You just do everything like that person. And the truth is, and this is what I want to remind you all of, you've heard me say this before, is that when we look, think, and act like somebody else, we build trust. This is human nature. It's got to come from like our families or something like that, that we, when we're around somebody for a long time, we tend to have trust with them. Just like, it's gender bias 101. And we all do it. We all feel it. We all know it. And the work that we're doing from a DEI perspective is to remind ourselves of that automatic response and to counteract that, to be open to other possibilities. But let's just say the average executive leader defaults to favoritism in that way. And I think it's actually really true. I think you also default to favoritism in that way. There's people at your organization that you just like being around because they're like you, and it just, the whole deal feels easy and you trust that person. So we're actually not competing with favoritism in that way. There is literally nothing you can do about it. I don't want you to transform yourself to be exactly like that other person by any means whatsoever. I do not want you to be like that other person at all. But then how do we get ahead? We have to be the favorite, or at least likable, to end up being the successor. So today's episode, I'm showing you how you can proactively become that favorite, but on your terms, not in that icky wicky way that is like beyond what we can really do anyway, but in my way, okay? And there are very specific clues and tools that I teach my clients to do to become the next successor. Let's call it that versus the favorite, because I really, that term is so loaded and ugly. So to become that next successor. Harvard Business Review conducted a survey in 2018 where they interviewed CEOs and how they manage their time. And obviously, a big part in the way that they manage their time was through depending on their executive team, their C-suite. And so I'm going to use that a little bit as a framework for today's conversation. I've quoted this study many, many times, and it gives you just like such clear, specific language as to why a CEO trusts their executive team. Same, same, why a VP trusts their directors, why directors trust their managers, why managers trust their ICs. It really kind of goes across the board in these four categories. And I've inferred it from this study. So the study was very specific about how CEOs manage their time. But the paragraph that I pulled out and just have like spent the past couple of years really dissecting and thinking about and asking myself, is that true? Is that true? And it just is proven over and over again, is how they're able to delegate to their C-suite executive team effectively, right? So essentially how the CEO has favorites. And so what they talk about are these four categories, these four ways that they trust their executive team. And one is trust. Do they trust them? The second thing is, does that person on my executive team have alignment? The third thing is, do they have a long-term vision? And the fourth thing that CEOs value in their executive team is, do they think outside of the status quo? So this is earned favoritism. This is not like we went to the same school. We look, act, think, talk like each other. It's just default favoritism. This is earned favoritism. So I'm going to break down some of these on how you can begin to do this as well right now to become the favorite. So the first thing is trust. And I want to really focus in on this specific aspect of trusting that you do your job well. Now, you'll hear me call you a corporate badass over and over, even though we've never met. And that's because I trust that you're good at your job. So this podcast is not about how to teach you how to be a better manager. You are an excellent manager. You are just having trouble building trust that you're ready for that next level of leadership, right? So that's what this podcast focuses on. This is what my work focuses on. And so it's the reminder that you're actually really great at your job. But one of the problems that we fall into, especially as women, is that when we're really, really good at our job, we don't talk about it. So you'll hear me talk about the concept of showing your work, how you make decisions, right? When a problem arises, do you go to your boss with solutions? Communicate about these decisions that you're making. So one of the things is, when we're really good at our job, we're like head down, focusing on it. We don't want to bother our boss with all of the minute details. So then therefore, we don't actually have conversations with our boss about the problems that we're solving and showing our work behind the decisions that we're making, right? And so in order to really build trust, to get on that favorite category, we not only have to be good at our job per se, we also have to show what it is that we're doing to be good at our job. That's how you're truly going to build trust with your leadership. So I want you to be good at your job, but I don't want you to be so good at your job that you just do it all yourself. Here's a great example. I was having a conversation with a client on Friday, and she was very upset because a person on her team didn't do what she told him to do. And so he kind of went around her and went straight to her boss with a presentation. And she was upset about this because she was like, he was supposed to come to me first and show me the presentation so I could approve it. But then second of all, he left out what I had told him to put into this presentation and then just sent it directly to my boss. So what her plan was, of course, she was very frustrated. So really, she just wanted to talk to me about managing her emotions around this. And I told her, this is actually a really big problem. And she was like, oh, I thought I just needed to feel better about it and deal with my direct report. And I said, no, this is a big deal. And it's also a big opportunity for you to quote unquote show your work. So what we talked about was that, yes, she needs to solve this problem with her direct report, but she also needs to go to her boss immediately and say, hey, just a heads up, this isn't the final presentation. I didn't get a chance to review this yet. I am speaking with such and such about the presentation, and I will get back to you when it's ready. She has to be proactive to her boss, because what she doesn't want to have happen is she doesn't want her boss to look at these slides and then, you know, go and infer that my client didn't do her job. So instead, she's going to be very proactive and say, hey, this isn't the final slides. This is not what was supposed to be presented to you. I'm going to go back. I'm going to review it with such and such, and we're going to get you the final product. All right. So this is how you start to build trust with your executive team. This is how you start to become that favorite. So you're not wasting his time. You're not making it his problem, but you're being super communicative and proactive so that your boss feels like you've got it. So many of us are being too secretive, and so our bosses don't even know that we're doing such a great job. And so you need to make sure that you're including your boss in conversation in the right way. So I was also not directing her to complain, okay, especially about her direct report. She's got it, but she has to tell her boss that she's got it. that is a huge, huge, huge piece of this whole conversation. Okay, so that's step one, is building trust that you can do your job. The second thing that CEOs value in their executive team is alignment. Now, here's how I want us to view alignment in terms of becoming the favorite. So if you are a leader and you're having regular conversations and building allies all across your executive team, not just with your boss, then you're gaining alignment, not just with your boss. You understand what the CEO is working on, what people in other departments are working on. I had a client that we actually labeled her executive team as the Big Six because they weren't all senior executive leaders, but it was very clear that these were the six people that she needed to have alignment with at all times. And so when you start to proactively create that alignment across the board and then communicate that with that alignment with your boss, then they're going to trust that you've got it, right? You're going to start to be that favorite. So one of the things that oftentimes my clients will hear is that they need to build relationships, that they need to get more visibility if they want to be promoted. And this is part of that visibility, is that there are other people that understand and know what you're working on. There are other people that you understand and know what they're working on. You have an overall sense of where your projects fall in the greater scheme of what's being worked on at the organization. You know the roadblocks, the hurdles. You've built relationships all across the board. So you've created that level of alignment so that your boss can relax. Essentially, I mean, if this was a study about how CEOs manage their time, it's like you're giving more time back to your boss. It's such a huge gift. And we can think, well, this is more conversations with my boss. And actually, yes, it is from a technical perspective, but they're so much more impactful, right? They're so much more beneficial to what you're working on. And so that's what I mean when I say building these relationships. It's not about building these relationships so that you can have like 10 favorites. You can be the favorite of 10 different people at your organization. It's really so that you have alignment, so that you know what matters to them. You know what doesn't matter to them. And you're putting the pieces together. And then that helps support your boss as well. So second step in becoming the favorite, so to speak, becoming the successor of your boss, is to have that alignment, to have more information than even your boss might have, to be able to just automatically put those pieces together. And so the third point on this study talks about that long-term vision. And you'll hear me talk about having your own long-term vision for your career, but I think that that matters a little bit less in terms of becoming that favorite. But what it does matter is that area of alignment, right? And so both from a short-term and a long-term perspective, you know that what you're working on and you're communicating with your boss and problem-solving from a future pace. So that's something else. So I'm going to kind of skip over that piece and then go to thinking outside of the status quo. Now, this is the one that gets really clunky for a lot of women, because as soon as we push back on our ideas, as soon as we try and do something different, then all of a sudden we feel like we're not the favorite. And it's really actually very true, because, you know, there is a such thing as a double bind dilemma. Even if these actual favorites, the ones that have just known them forever, there is that quality of yes person, right? The person who is like them. And so when we just start pushing back, but we don't have the executive communication skills to back up that pushback, then we find ourselves actually not being the favorite. We find ourselves being excluded. We find ourselves getting punished for our big ideas. I don't want that to happen for you. So what we need to develop is political savviness. So from an executive communication perspective, if, which we should, which we automatically do, by the way, you're always thinking outside of the status quo. I guarantee it. If you don't look, think, act, and talk like your executive leadership team, you're different, right? You're thinking outside of the status quo. That it's not even, it doesn't even have to be a novel idea. You just see things differently. Every single client I work with sees things differently. It's part of the frustration and the annoyance. And that's what I'm talking about in today's episode, is how do we become the favorite and still see things differently? Executive communication. That's the answer. Political savviness, which goes along with that executive communication. So our leadership team has to trust that we know how to conduct ourselves, that we know how to communicate our different opinions. And there is a way to do this. You know, one of my favorite things about coaching, which is a little maniacal, is that I love, love, love telling people what to do. Meaning that I will tell you how to communicate, right? You'd start by just having the literal words. So how do I present this idea to my boss that it's a little bit different? It's a little bit wonky, right? It's not necessarily what he's thinking. And still do it in a way that isn't going to set off alarms. And there is a finesse to this. And it is situation by situation. But let me give you an example of this. So this particular skill might be nuanced. It might be situation by situation. But there is one very simple key to how you can begin to navigate this. First and foremost, in all of your conversations, if you know that you're going to have a difference of opinion, you start with sameness, right? You start with what you've heard. You start with what you're being told by your boss. You start by acknowledging their point of view. You can even say something like, I know this is a little bit opposite of what you usually are talking about. I know this is a different direction, but hear me out. Here's something that I've investigated and I've been thinking about. You could say something like, I don't need an answer to this. I don't need you to say if this is the right direction or not, but I just want to share something with you, something that I've been thinking about. You can preface it by meeting them exactly where they're at, right? Acknowledging them, making sure that they feel heard, and connecting with them first before you go into the conversation. You can also do it by bringing someone else into the conversation. So I was having a conversation with Bill and he was talking to me about this thing that we're working on. And then I was throwing some ideas his way. Can I just share with you this conversation that we were having? And that's another way that you can offer a different opinion. So have buy-in from somebody else. Another way is that you can have somebody, like, let's say you want to talk about that at a meeting. You want to raise your hand and be like, I see things differently. If this is happening on a consistent basis, somebody who already has trust in the room can call on you and be like, you know what? I think Susan sees things differently. I'd love to hear from her, right? So what we're doing is we're using our political savviness to sort of realize that, hey, my opinions are not going to be welcome here, but yet I still want to share my opinions in a way that can be heard. And so we do it in a politically savvy way so that other people can actually hear us, engage in conversation. We do it in the right time, right places. And you could say, oh God, Stacey, this is so complicated. Do I always have to think about this? And the truth is, yes. Like, until it becomes second nature, you do have to kind of plan ahead. And that's where the coaching comes in. That's where that guidance comes in. But when you do this and you do this well, oh my God, do you become the favorite of your boss, right? You get to become that successor. They trust you, right? You're in alignment. You have other backers at your organization. You also know how to think outside of the status quo in a way that is relatable, in a way that is digestible, in a way that other people can actually take what it is that you have to say and do something with it. This is huge. So I encourage all of you to begin to do this. First of all, I encourage you to even set as a goal that you want to become the favorite, that you want to be a successor for your boss. And then once that goal is set, just focus on these three areas, right? Really start to think about, how am I communicating about the work that I'm working on? Am I building trust in the way that shows them how I make decisions, what it is that I'm working on, so that not only do they trust that I'm going to meet my deadline, but they trust in how and why I'm going to be able to meet that deadline? Am I building alignment across my organization with other leaders? And do I understand the long-term vision and the short-term goals for everyone around me? And am I able to communicate my differences in opinion in a politically savvy way? You begin to do this, you will become the next successor, you will get promoted, and you'll also see where the gaps are. You'll see that, you know, I don't want to work at this organization. I don't want to do this work to build alignment with this particular leader, but I have developed these skill sets that are going to carry with me to other organizations, other groups that I might be working for, other leaders at other organizations. So anyway, I hope this is helpful to you. Put it into action. Let me know how it goes. And if you know somebody that could benefit from the Women Changing Leadership podcast, share this podcast with them. I have a small-time marketing budget of one, right? And I need your support to share this message with as many women as possible, because together we make the executive table a better place, and that starts with you. All right, everyone, thank you so much for listening, and I'll see you next week. Bye. Before you go, I have a question for you. Do you know how close you are to your next promotion? Really? Not what your boss has told you, not what you even believe to be true, but have you actually taken the time to sit down, take an assessment, review the 5 categories that it takes to get promoted into senior executive leadership positions, and decided where you fall in each category, and given yourself a ranking on a scale of 1 to 10 of how close you are to getting your next promotion? Have you done this? Well, now's your chance. If that feels interesting to you and you're like, hey, I want to know exactly how close I might actually be, or how far away you might be, and what it's going to take to get you even closer, then I invite you to take my promotability quiz. This is a quiz that I put together with practical tips that actually tell you where you're lacking and where you're winning. What are the areas that you actually need to improve, and not necessarily what your boss is telling you all the time, so that you can take concrete steps towards landing that next promotion and changing the face of the leadership table. Go to yourpromotabilityscore.com to take your free assessment today. Yourpromotabilityscore.com, and let me know how it goes.